The following program is paid for by Pioletti, Pioletti & Nichols for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this program do not constitute financial or professional advice. Do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. And do not create any type of fiduciary duty or other professional relationship between the audience and presenters. No person listening should act or refrain from acting on the basis of the content of the program without first seeking appropriate professional advice and/or counseling. Nor shall the information be used as a substitute for professional advice and or counseling. Cumulus expressly disclaims any and all liability relating to any actions taken or not taken based on any or all contents of the program. Please consult a professional provider before making any personal decisions and for guidance about your specific situation condition.
FM 102.1 and AM 1230 WJBC, The Scott Miller Show is on the radio. It's time for Law School with me, Scott Miller, all possible by Pioletti, Pioletti and Nichols. Mike Nichols joins me in studio. Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year. New Year, new me. Great to be here, you know.
You don't follow New Year, new me. I know you well enough that that's not a phrase that you say to anybody that is your friend.
I may have said that a couple times to the state's attorney this week, and they just gave me the same reaction you provided.
Nobody's new year, new me. And if you are, and that's helping you get through whatever you're going through, good for you, but nobody's new year, new me.
So my assistant, Evan, told me that 84% of people have already given up on their New Year's resolutions. Is that true?
Well, we need to talk to Evan, and we need to know why Evan's Googling fun facts about New Year's and not helping us close cases.
We'll have that conversation. I think he has a review coming up. I'll let him know.
Listen, why are you telling me fun facts about percentage of New Year's Eve? All right. Hey, I want to talk to you. I've got a handful of questions that we got messaged in, but there is a big news story happening right now that started over the holidays, and it's a horrendous story. I want to talk about Nick Reiner. Nick Reiner is the son of Rob Reiner, and Rob Reiner and his wife were murdered in their house. Well, now yesterday, news comes out that Nick Reiner's former lawyer, Alan Jackson, quit the case Wednesday morning, but just said some remarks outside of the courthouse at the time of this reporting. He said that he was previously defending Nick, who is accused of murdering his parents, Rob and Michelle. Outside of the courthouse, Jackson gave a brief press conference where he said he could not fully reveal why he had to withdraw from the case. He also proclaimed that Nick Reiner is not guilty of murder. He said, "My team and I remain deeply, deeply committed to Nick Reiner and to his best interests. We're just not convinced. We know the legal process will reveal the true facts about the circumstances about this case, Nick's case. A lot has been printed about Nick, about the family, speculation. On December 15th in the early morning hours, I got a call. Me and my team, we dropped everything." He said, "For the last 3 weeks, they've worked tirelessly to investigate up until today." So, based on your expertise, if Nick Reiner or someone on his behalf hired this attorney and for 3 weeks put a case together to defend him, preparing for litigation and whatnot, and then is no longer Nick Reiner's attorney, what do you think happened there?
I mean, there's so many layers to this case, and obviously I want to answer your question. I'm going to preface this with one thing, that every state's a little bit different. So I can just speak to how Illinois would treat this and the rules of professional conduct for attorneys here. And if we withdraw from a case, you know, there's generally a reason. One, maybe we haven't been paid. They broke a clause in the contract that we have. We have an engagement letter required by the state of Illinois with every client. Or the client's told us something that they want us to divulge, but ethically we can't. Or lastly, the client wants to potentially take the stand and lie. In Illinois, we can't do that in a criminal case. Generally, things come to a head where the client's asking us to do something where we, under our oath and in our licensing within the state of Illinois, that we can't do it. Now, I will say this, when I say there's layers to this, this is a career-making case, even for a giant law firm that this is likely that was taking this case. Something spectacular had to have happened behind the scenes. You know, I'll say this, you take your clients as they are. There's clearly some things going on with this young man, whether it be addiction issues or mental health issues, but that's not uncommon within the legal community. You know, we take our clients, and usually people that are acting rationally and not, and you know, drug induced or what have you, don't do these types of things. So, you know, I hope that answers your question, but there's going to be much, much more to come out. But keep in mind, under our, when we sign that oath as attorneys, that when our clients tell us something, it's privileged, and we have to go to the grave with that. So this may, we may get bits and pieces. There's probably going to be a movie or some sort of documentary in the future where things may get revealed, but ultimately that young man holds that privilege. It's not the attorney's ability to come in and say, I can divulge all these secrets, especially when the case is being litigated right now. But I mean, this case is so fresh at this point. It seems to be they're gearing up for a not guilty for reason of insanity or something similar.
Yeah, I mean, it's all been rumored in the press that they were at Conan O'Brien's house the night before, and there was a huge fight, that a heated argument that happened at that party just hours before. And then there's been this conversation here recently about not guilty for reasons of insanity. But as soon as that lawyer quit, I go, what is happening here? Like, so can we make up fake things that could have happened? This is what, when you were just explaining, this is what I thought. What happens if Nick Reiner allegedly tells his attorney, yes, I murdered my parents, but I need you to get me off from this. I have all the money in the world. Would that be a reason an attorney would have to quit, or no?
No, that definitely wouldn't be, and that'd be an attorney's dream. And most of these cases, these high-level cases, you know, there is a sense of culpability that you do have to leverage the situation in the best way possible to get the best outcome. You know, I don't think that there's any indication that he hasn't committed the acts that caused their deaths. It's just a matter of, is there an ability, is there a legal defense to go along with those things?
So what is something you could make up in your head that could have been said to an attorney that would make the attorney say, I have to stop being your attorney right now?
Based on this person in this case, I mean, he's got unlimited money. You know, I always tell people, right, we get a law school problem, you have unlimited time and your client has unlimited money. But that's not how it works in the real world. However, this case is so high profile and there's gobs of money to go around. It has to be something unethical or legal strategy. I want you to effectuate this legal strategy and the attorney saying, ethically, we can't do that, or our firm name, our brand is on the line, and we're unwilling to do that.
Yeah.
But again, because this is a career-making case, I mean, this is an attorney's dream. Whether your client's guilty or not, you still have a job to do. You know, I always go back to the Nuremberg trials and things like that. And, you know, surely I've represented clients that are guilty of the offense that they're alleged to be charged with. But that doesn't mean that our job stops there. You know, we've got to effectuate the ability for them to move on with their life. Now it's a double murder. That's a little bit different situation on how you mitigate it, but there's still ability to mitigate in a case like that.
So I was wondering, you know, that we don't know the truth to any of this, and maybe we never will, but it just seemed really awkward to me that if this young man killed his parents and now he's using his parents' money to defend himself in murdering the people where he's getting the money that he's now using to defend himself, I'm wondering, and again, we don't know, but I'm wondering if the other, the surviving siblings, if they put a stop to the money, if that could even happen in this short amount of time, saying, you know, what legal could they step in and go, we need to cut off funds to him because he's just using our dead parents' money to defend himself on him killing them, allegedly.
It's 100% a dichotomy there. And what is likely happen is this is going to be a nasty probate situation. So the other surviving sibling or siblings files a probate case, or the heirs, and they try to put a pin in that and say, hey, you're not going to dive into that. And it 100% could be. It'd be pretty quick for that to happen because it's going to have to be litigated. A civil judge is going to have to make determinations relative to that estate. But there's going to be so much more to come. I think there, like you said, there's some flavor to this because it's so early on.
I also wonder if, you know, and I don't know this family, and God rest their soul, but I would assume that the Reiner children were receiving checks every single month for many years of their life, if not every year of their life, to provide a lifestyle for them. I know Nick was homeless at some point and there was some addiction issues, but that doesn't mean he still wasn't receiving checks from his parents. So maybe he's not getting into the parents' checkbook to pay for the attorneys, but he's got stacks of money from the past 20 some odd years, 30 years he's lived his life to use, you know?
Surely. And I don't know the relationship with the other sibling or siblings at this juncture and how that's being viewed as maybe a sympathetic view relative to his mental health or his drug abuse. I mean, I think it's just so hard at this point. Because this is so high profile, we're going to get much, much more on this.
Yeah.
And I look forward to talking about it more
yes.
as things come forth. And maybe we can dive in into the weeds because it some things are going to get leaked, right, wrong, or indifferent.
Yep. All right. Hey, I've got some questions here from some listeners. This first one here. Can I be held legally responsible for injuries caused by my teenage or young adult child?
Yeah, this is a tricky one, and this does come up from time to time. I would say it's a little more rare. Again, in situations where people know that a family has money, that's really the rub here, because you don't sue people for, you know, dollars that they don't have. Everyone knows that. However, technically under the law, if your child's under 18 and they're not emancipated, if their conduct is willful or malicious or a combination thereof, there's a potentially ability to recoup funds. Okay. This is generally not your car accident case. My kid drives the car, they smoke somebody, and my insurance steps up. Obviously, most people know that. This is your situation where
there's
somebody's
a fist
caused
fight.
Injuries. Yeah. Fist
you
fight.
You push
yeah.
somebody off of a hill,
starts
off
a fire.
Roof of a house, starts a fire. Yeah. Yes.
Those types of situations. There are caps in the state of Illinois. It's usually approximately around $20,000 per incident, which is not that much if serious injuries are caused, but it's actual damages that your minor caused. So a lot of people throw around the term pain and suffering and things like that quite a bit in civil matters. That's usually not available in the state of Illinois. So it has to be willful, malicious conduct. And it's actual damages.
All right. Last question for this week. Is it legal for an employer to fire someone right before retirement or pension eligibility?
Well, Illinois is at will state. So essentially, you're on the hook at any time to be canned. And there is a little bit of a balancing act between the private and public sector. Versus, you know, I work for a local university in the state of Illinois versus I work for, you know, a local law firm or something like that. But yeah, say you're leading up to retirement, you're about to have your retirement vested, and all of a sudden your employer decides, well, you got to go, bud. I think you're going to have a tough time. Generally, they don't have to give you some sort of performance metrics or, you know, they could say, we just need to downsize the law firm or we need to, you know, make some decisions as a company rolling into 2026. And you're probably going to have a tough time fighting that. Now, there is a ton of litigation in this realm. So employers know that they don't want to spend gobs of money on attorneys. So there's usually a middle ground to solve for, hey, I was this close to earning this amount of my pension or my retirement was going to kick in. How about we negotiate a middle ground there? But this is ripe for litigation for sure.
All right. If somebody wants to get in touch with Pioletti and Nichols to talk about a legal case, whether they're interested in going after someone or they're being gone after or they're thinking about getting a divorce or much, much more, how do they get in touch with you and your team?
Yeah, our best resource is our website, PioLettiLaw.com. And we got a Help Me page on there, tons of FAQ pages, blogs we've written on certain topics. And go and research us. Make sure you feel comfortable in talking with us. But we feel like we can help you in your case and look forward to talking with you.
Fantastic. It's always good to see you, Mike. Thanks for coming
in. You as well.
All right. It's FM 102.1 and AM 1230 WJBC.